Blog Talk Radio.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae, step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap, catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like In Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Might check.
That sound you may hear, if you hear a collective gasping, it sounds like somebody trying to catch their breath, or maybe somebody just stubbed their toe really hard against an end table. Maybe a collective grunt of angst and anguish just rushed over you, wherever you may be, however you may be enjoying this podcast. Here's why, more than likely, why that occurred. It is because for the second season in a row, the Memphis Grizzlies will be without multiple key players for a playoff series against the San Antonio Spurs. It's certainly not exactly the same, of course, and we'll talk about that throughout our GBB Live 2017 playoff preview, but there are some similarities, and of course, the news of the day, Tony Allen's injury to his calf, most likely out for the entire San Antonio Spurs series. Hopefully, he returns sooner, but it is very possible that Tony Allen has played his last game as a Memphis Grizzly. We've got a lot to get into tonight. Thankfully, we have a lot of good folks to do that with, and we begin, of course, you'll notice, those of you that are faithful listeners to the podcast, that there was no, you know, rest in peace, Chris Faulkner Sounder, which sounded terrific, but this show is no longer just hosted by me. No. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, I now have a co-host. His name is Brandon Connor, a.k.a. Ball from Grace, a.k.a. Puns McGee. Brandon, how are you doing, sir?
Well, based on the news, I've been a little bit better. Things are not looking bright for the Grizzlies right now. Although, I mean, it's not last year. They're not starting Jordan Farmar at point guard this year. So, I mean, there's still things to be thankful for, but things don't look great today.
And as Miss Me Tweet would say, Matt Barnes is not on the Memphis Grizzlies. That is another reason to be positive today. All right. Ways to get in touch with the show, GBB Live. Thank you so much for wherever you are, however you're tuning in, however you're joining us this week for our playoff series preview against the San Antonio Spurs. Thanks for being with us. You can follow us on Twitter and tweet us there at GBB Live. You can tweet me if you'd like on my personal account at Joe Mullinax, M-U-L-L-I-N-A-X. You can tweet Brandon if you would like. It's still Ball from Grace, right, Brandon?
That is correct.
Ball from Grace, just double checking, at Ball from Grace. Or if you want to follow our blog, that I am so fortunate to be the site manager for, so fortunate to have Brandon as a senior writer for. You can follow grizzlybearblues.com at SBN Grizzlies. And we have a heck of a lineup of guests for you this evening and beyond, whenever you may be listening to the show. This week, for our preview of the San Antonio Spurs series, which just got a little bit more heavy, as Brandon alluded to a moment ago, as did I, we're going to have Kevin Leip on the show here in about 10 minutes. We're very excited about having Kevin back on. Kevin, of course, a former site manager over at Grizzly Bear Blues. He was a site manager before Chris Faulkner was, before I was. That was kind of the progression. Kevin Leip now does a tremendous job over at the Memphis Flyer. He works various jobs for the Flyer, but you would probably know him best as the Beyond the Arc blog manager. And he had a great preview or a great review of the Grizzlies that went into the Memphis Flyer just the past day or so. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about Mike Conley. I wrote a piece about Mike Conley being the leader of the Grizzlies now earlier in the week. I'll get Kevin's take on that particular hot take. And then, that's going to be in about 30 minutes. Jumped ahead of the gun a little bit. Our first guest before Kevin is going to be John Roser.
John Roser of 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis. We'll talk to him about whether or not a 43-39 season is a success or failure. We'll talk to Roser about the playoff rotation. We'll talk to him about whether or not Vince Carter, Jamichael Green, Zach Randolph, who has to step up for these Grizzlies. We'll talk to Kevin Leip about that as well in the second segment. And then we'll have both Roser of 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis, and Kevin Leip of the Memphis Flyer Beyond the Arc blog. We'll have them both give their official series predictions, and Brandon and I will do that as well. So sorry for the confusion. We're going to lead off with John Roser here in about 9 minutes. We're going to have Kevin Leip on after him in our new little setup here on the podcast. But first, I want to talk to Brandon a little bit. I really want to get into, like we said, the news of the day, the issue that is Tony Allen being out for the foreseeable future, likely for the entire series against the San Antonio Spurs. And I was on with Greg Gaston and the good folks over at Middays on Sports 56 this morning, Brandon. And we talked about how Tony Allen is a player that is imperfect. And this Grizzlies team is imperfect, in part not because of Tony Allen, but just the overall personification of what this era of Grizzlies basketball has been, you could argue, is Tony Allen. And people like our own Chase Lucas over at GBB, you know, their point about Tony is, and Chris Harrington made this point of the Memphis Commercial Appeal in his Pick and Pops this week, the Grizzlies have been trying for years to try to replace Zach Randolph and Tony Allen. I think that's a very fair way to put it. And they haven't been able to. Well, now, here is your shot to see if you have who you think could be the potential Tony Allen replacement. And that's not fair to put entirely on Wayne Selden right at the end of the season as you enter a playoff series against the second best team in the NBA. That's not entirely fair to put on James Ennis or Troy Daniels, whoever they decide to put in that starting role on Saturday night. But it is a chance for you to kind of start to get the feel, if Tony Allen does not return, what will it look like to not have that stud defender on the bench or on the court? Because Kawhi Leonard, who is having an MVP-esque season, now he has to be licking his chops because there is no Tony Allen. Even though T.A. has stepped back a bit as a defender, he still would have drawn the assignment of defending Kawhi. And now James Ennis, maybe, you know, people were excited about Wayne Selden and how he did recently. But neither of those guys are anywhere near the caliber of Kawhi Leonard. Tony Allen probably wouldn't have been able to stop Kawhi entirely. Nobody else is even going to be able to keep close to him now, are they, Brandon?
No, definitely not. And that, I mean, really what that does is it hurts your depth, really, especially like out on the wings. And then you kind of have to wonder, like, what is Memphis going to do, like, with the starting lineup? You've got Conley, and you've got Gasol and Jamichael Green, and then you've still got Vince Carter, who you can start. Then I guess you're probably going to end up throwing Ennis out there at the three. But then what are you doing? It's really a question of now who's going to defend Kawhi on the defensive end. They're going to rely on Vince a lot of the time. I don't think Ennis really has the sort of foot speed that you want to kind of keep up with him there. Are you going to try to – I don't know that you want Conley defending him as much, because then he's chasing him down. He's wearing him down on the defensive end, and you really need Conley, like, at full strength on the offensive end if you really want him to be effective. And he's really been – the greatest offensive weapon lately for the Grizzlies. So you need him playing at the peak of his abilities in addition to Mark. And so you don't. So really this just like throws just a huge wrench into the plans of like what the Grizz were going to do, especially like defensively. And then that leads to issues on the offensive. So really the wing position now is just up completely up in the air.
It changes the way that you're probably going into scheming how to slow down Kawhi, because you're not going to be able to stop him completely. I don't think anybody believed that. But before, where you may have said, okay, when Tony's out there, we're going to let Tony just kind of hound him and that be his main focus. Now that Tony's not there, you may see more double teams. You may see, you know, them forcing Kawhi to get the ball to other players. And of course, the Spurs have other players that can make you pay for that, but it's just a difference of philosophy. And another thing that really gets impacted by the fact that Tony Allen's not going to be there, now you have Kawhi able to rest a little bit more depending on the scheme that the Grizzlies put up against him. Now he's able to not have to expend so much energy on offense, So when he goes on defense and he defends a player like a Mike Conley or a Vince Carter, he can put some more energy into that assignment, which makes him even more dangerous as a defender. So it makes you nervous, safe to say. I'm going to be honest, I'm not as down on it as others are. I think that David Fizdale and his staff, they're going to come up with the best idea they possibly can. I do think, depending on who they choose, it could make you at least more of a threat. It's not like they can collapse the paint at all now. You know, Tony Allen is one of those players, and you could argue Wayne Selden, but Tony Allen is one of those last guys that's a perimeter player, Andrew Harrison as well, for the Grizzlies, who you don't necessarily respect as a three-point threat. You know, if you have Troy Daniels and Vince Carter both out on the floor, yeah, your defense will probably struggle a bit on the perimeter. But there's, you know, if it's Mike, Troy Daniels, Vince Carter, Jamichael Green, and Marc Gasol, all five of those dudes can hit threes. So it makes your offense a little bit more dynamic than it was before. That certainly probably won't outweigh the Tony Allen issues. But to me, the Grizzlies were going to struggle in the series with or without Tony Allen. I don't really see this as a death now as much as it maybe is just another nail in the coffin. You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Molinax. I'm chatting with my co-host, Brandon Connor, here in our opening segment as we lead up to our first guest, John Roser, here in the next few minutes on our playoff preview, looking ahead to Grizzlies Spurs. It starts on Saturday night, and the Tony Allen news was a bit of a bummer for a lot of folks today, not trying to take away from that. But Tony Allen was, you know, at least in my opinion, Brandon, never going to win or lose you this series. It was always going to come down to Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. Those are the two guys that have to play above their heads in order for the Grizzlies to win. And then beyond that, you need players like Vince Carter, who's 40 years old, to play above his head. You need a player like Zach Randolph to be able to play above his head as that sixth man of the year candidate. You need James Ennis now. You need Andrew Harrison, Brandon Wright, Jamichael Green. You know, those guys that are going to make up that rotation that we'll talk a little bit more about with John Roser here in a moment, that playoff rotation, eight or nine guys, you need every single one of them essentially to have at or above a career run in the playoffs. And that just kind of adds to the miracle nature of this. Now, make no mistake, the Grizzlies have been here before with the San Antonio Spurs. And I tweeted out a while ago, isn't it fitting, or wouldn't it be fitting, that, you know, a lot of people are starting to come to terms with the fact this is probably the end for this grit and grind era of the Grizzlies in terms of the core four, Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, both free agents this coming summer. Wouldn't it be fitting if the way that it started, the upset of the Spurs, and it ended in a similar fashion, but especially with the news about Tony Allen, and we'll get to our official predictions later on down the road, it just seems like way too many guys have to have everything go right for Memphis to pull this off.
Well, it certainly does. And I kind of want to push back on the idea, like you say that Allen isn't necessarily going to be the one that decides the series, but you really need Mike and Mark to be at their peak to win. But the real issue with the Allen injury is the fact that it gives Mike and Mark, and Mike especially, just a little less room for error. And so you need all those guys to be performing at their max. And Tony actually allows them a little bit more leeway, especially on the defensive end. There's a little bit less effort that they have to expend, so they're going to be better on the offensive end. So I think that's the real issue with it. It's not necessarily what Tony does or doesn't bring to the table himself, offensively. It's more about how he's boosts the team around him that's really going to be what the Grizzlies miss most in terms of this series. And so, I mean, you're certainly right. This is going to be an uphill battle. It was going to be an uphill battle before, and it's going to be an uphill, even more of an uphill battle now. But I think a lot of people also are just, everyone's bummed that the core four are probably, this is probably their last year together. But I think a lot of people are even more bummed now because, I mean, if the Grizzlies don't win this series, Tony might not be back. That might have been his last game as a Grizzly, for his career. And so they may have, the last you see of Tony Allen in front of the Grizzlies, playing in front of the grindhouse, could have been just a meaningless game against the Mavericks, and he ends up going out injured. And I think a lot of people are really just bummed about that. Maybe they weren't necessarily expecting to win, but now Tony's not going to be able to play for this series. So you might never see him again except in somebody else's uniform. And I think that's kind of a huge bummer as well.
We'll get Roser's take on this in a minute, but before I bring him in, I was kind of curious to your opinion, Brandon. I saw a few people lashing out at David Fizdale for even playing Tony Allen in that meaningless quote-unquote game. Do you give any blame to David Fizdale for that injury occurring to Tony Allen?
I think a lot of people were a little harsher than I would be, like, for in terms of this injury, like, in terms of playing him. And I think for Tony, it's probably – like, if it were Mike and Mark, I think I'd be a little bit less severe on him. But Tony's one of those guys who is always better, like, after a break. So taking him out of the game completely is probably better than, you know, just giving him a few minutes to, like, stay in rhythm before the playoffs. So, like, Mike and Mark, you kind of want to give him a couple of minutes, like 15 to 20 minutes in a game, like, even if it's meaningless, just to keep him tuned up. Like, I understand that, but with Allen, it's more – you know, just give him time off, let him rest, and then let him come back full speed. So with Allen, I'm a little harsher on Fizdale because I'd rather just him not play at all. And so yeah, I do play some of the blame, but hindsight's 2020. So you always kind of look back and say, well, he wouldn't have gotten hurt, but who's to say he wouldn't have gotten hurt in the first game of this series? So there's that, but I'd say Fizdale does certainly deserve some of the blame for that.
And who's to say that if Tony Allen had not gotten hurt, come out, slowed down Kawhi on the way to the Grizzlies winning a 6 or 7 game miracle series, everybody's not seeing the praises of David Fizdale for keeping the team locked in. And, you know, it's all kind of revisionist history. But I agree with you to the extent of Tony Allen, you know, being one of those exceptions to the rule when it comes to he usually plays pretty well coming off of those 2 or 3 week breaks. Maybe once the 7th seed was clinched, you just shut him down until the playoffs. I think you can make an argument for that. We will ask that question and much more to our next guest. We're excited to have him back on the show. He's a friend of GBB Live at this point. He is of 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis, and the Grizzlies pregame show. He's going to be busy these next couple of weeks. His name is John Rosen. Mr. Roser, thank you for being back on with us here at GBB Live. How are you, sir?
Good. I like how you said I'll be busy the next few weeks because, yeah, it's probably going to be 2 weeks now with the injury news that we got earlier today. I was one of the few that thought they could win this series. If anything, I thought it was going to go 7 games. I think it's going to go 5 at max now, unless some crazy stuff happens.
So you think Tony Allen makes that much of a difference?
I think you have no one who can guard Kawhi Leonard now. And what makes that even more difficult is that allows Kawhi not to have to work as hard on the offensive end, which means they can let him go defensively. And one of the things, and I actually stole this from David Thorpe. I heard David Thorpe talking about Kawhi in this aspect when he was talking about relative to them playing the Grizzlies. And what he noticed is that one of the things Popovich did is that Pop mainly just had Kawhi guard his man. So Kawhi's playing small forward. They didn't play him at the four at all, really, against the Grizzlies. I mean, they may have a couple possessions here and there. But for the most part, Kawhi played the small forward spot, I believe. They didn't move him around much. And the guy he guarded was typically either Vince Carter or James Ennis. And they had him really just stick that guy. And one of my worries or one of the fears going into this series was what happens when Pop unleashes him defensively and basically says, it's not really so much about guarding Mike Conley, but what happens if there's somebody on that court when it was going to be Tony Allen. If they put Kawhi on Tony Allen, which basically means we know how the Spurs have treated Tony Allen in years past, don't guard him, and basically you let Kawhi Leonard play free safety and just roam all over the court off the ball. That was kind of one of those fears. And now, I mean, I don't know if Popovich will even have to do that this series now. Kawhi, I do not think, is going to have to work as hard on the offensive end like Tony would make him work. And so if they want to let him roam defensively, they can let him roam defensively. If they don't want to, they probably aren't going to have to be able to win this series now. Kawhi could go off. Kawhi is now at a point where Kawhi could score 32 a game in this series and do it in an efficient way, where at least I think Tony Allen was going to make him do it in an inefficient way, as inefficient as Kawhi Leonard could possibly be. I mean, he's one of the five best players in the world.
We're chatting with John Roser of 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already do so, at John_Roser. Roser, the Grizzlies went 43-39 this season. The season before, with the crazy injuries and all that stuff that has been documented over and over again, they went 42-40. Do you think this season for the Memphis Grizzlies, essentially a repeat of what has occurred in the past, seven seed series against the Spurs, huge underdogs, was this season a success, a failure, or both in your eyes?
Well, in some senses, I don't want to ride the fence here. I don't want to ride the fence and say both.
You're allowed to say both, because I said both in an article earlier this week.
Oh, no, and I have the Grizzly Bear Blue Live episode outline for April 13th, 2017 that you emailed to me. I have it printed out sitting here right here with me. So you do give me both as an option here. Success in the sense that you saw Mike Conley and Mark Gasol, you got peak performance. And I actually think, I don't know if Mark – I think you hope Mark can be what he's been this year. Maybe the three-point percentage can go up a little bit more. He starts taking a few more, and it can go up a little bit more. We've seen guys in the NBA this year who are taking a career high in three-point attempts and shooting a career high percentage. I think Westbrook's one of those guys. I want to say Isaiah Thomas is right there or close to his career high in percentage, but he's shooting – I think Isaiah Thomas's career high for three-point percentage is like 39, but it was on like 4.1 attempts per game. And this season, Isaiah Thomas is taking almost 9 threes a game and shooting like 38 to 38.5%. So maybe Mark's percentage can go up. But Conley, I think Mike can continue to get better too, how they've kind of unleashed him offensively. So I want to say it's a success in that point, because we've seen the best versions since they've been in Grizzlies uniforms of Mike Conley and Mark Gasol. I do believe that. Also, Zach Randolph, as much as he probably hates it, the six-man Zach Randolph has worked. He's still getting his shots. He's still scoring his points. He leads the team in rebounding. But a failure in the sense that Chandler Parsons did not work out, and I don't know if it's going to work out. And I've been someone who's backed Chandler and says, give it time, give it time. I've heard other things that leads me to believe it's never going to get right. And if they can't find a way to get out of this, whether that's trade, him retiring, medical stuff, who knows? I don't know that's gonna hamstring this franchise for a long time coming. Then also a failure in the sense of you're the same seed you were last year. And last year you had freaking Jordan Farmar and Ray McCallum and Xavier Munford. And, you know, now they were a higher seed at the point before they lost everybody. But you came back with your best players – and you end up the exact same seed. You lose home games to the Brooklyn Nets. You go on the Los Angeles road trip from hell, you know, right after New Year's and get run off by the Lakers and Clippers. You get destroyed after Christmas by the Orlando Magic. Just bad losses, just a lot of bad losses. And they've had some great wins this year, but it's a failure in the sense to me that I think they should have won more games even without Chandler working out. I still think they should have won more games this year.
Well, I think Burlington had actually talked about this, but they had, I mean, they've always been, like, last year they had those, like, blowout losses to the good teams, but then, like, they've never lost like this to just, like, mediocre teams. They've just been terrible against, like, teams that are below 500. They've just lost, like, some just inexplicable games this season, and it's just been, like, disasters, like the 122 points against the Nets. I don't care what the starting lineup was. Like, you shouldn't be giving up that many points to the Nets.
No. Now I'm with you 100% on that. Now when you do go look at the standings, you say, okay, Chandler doesn't work out. So what are the games that you think how many more games do you think they should have won? Because, look, throughout the course of an NBA season, you're going to lose some games to bad teams. You know, you do have schedule losses, as they say. You're going to lose some games to bad teams. So if you go back and look at it, how many should have been reversed? Obviously, Brooklyn on the road, you should have won that. There's no doubt about that. I contend you should not have lost both road games to the Lakers. You should have at least gotten one of those, at least won one of them. And I think the Clippers without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, you should win that. So that's what? That's three more wins I give them right there. So now you're up to, what, 46 wins. The Thunder ended up with 47. And there's a couple others you can find in there, Orlando. And there's some others sprinkled in there. But when you look at the final standings, the Clippers end up with 51 wins. The Jazz end up with 51 wins. I mean, you'd be talking about nine more wins or, you know, eight more wins because you'd have the tiebreaker with Utah. You're talking about eight more wins to be able to get in that 4-5 matchup. So I don't even know if they should have just won eight more games to get up in that 4-5 matchup. So I think the best possible spot you might have been looking at anyways, this is all, of course, with Chandler Parsons not working out, is would have been that sixth spot. And, I mean, I'd rather play San Antonio than Houston. And I may be different from people, but I want nothing to do with Houston because when you play Houston, I've seen it. Houston, I mean, I've been screaming this for months that you'd rather play the Spurs than the Rockets because the Spurs at least will slow it down and play your style, whereas Houston, I've seen it against Houston. I mean, Houston built huge leads, monster leads against them in three games. One of them you were able to come back because the Rockets went 3-24 from three in the second half, and Troy Daniels got loose a little bit. And the Grizzlies were able to come back and win that. But you've seen in all four of the Houston games, even the two that you won, they get wide open threes against you. Like, they just do. They get wide open threes, and you have to pray to God that they miss. And so I just always felt like, you know, even if they would have had a few more wins and would have gotten up to the sixth seed, I don't know if you go back and look at the schedule, if they could have gotten, you say, well, they should have won this, this, or this. You're looking at 51, 52 wins without a healthy Chandler Parsons to get you into that 4-5 matchup. And I don't know if you go back and look at the schedule, if they would have had enough to be able to do that. So the best you probably would have been looking at was the sixth seed, which it still would have been cool to finish ahead of the Thunder.
Mike D'Antoni, coach of the year candidate for the Grizzlies, for Grizzly Bear Blues' NBA awards post that we had today. Playoff rotation, Roser, obviously with Tony Allen out. Who do you think is in and who is out of the playoff rotation for the Grizzlies?
Well, at this point, I think everybody's in except for Wade Baldwin and Deontay Davis and Jarrell Martin. And depending on foul trouble, you could see Jarrell get in there. I think Deontay and Wade Baldwin will be the two guys that will be out of the rotation for sure. Like, without a doubt, the only way they're going to play is in garbage time of a blowout. That's the only way they're going to play. But, I mean, I think you see now Troy Daniels is going to play. James Ennis probably slides into that starting spot without Tony Allen. Or maybe it is Troy Daniels. I don't know. It's going to be Ennis or Daniels that slides into that starting spot. They are so thin. They were already so thin on the wings anyways. And now you add this to it with Tony. You throw in this wrinkle. I mean, it is impossible for them, I think, probably at this time, that they could go. I mean, I guess they could go small if they threw out Conley, Daniels, Ennis, and Carter, because that was kind of one of the wrinkles you were thinking San Antonio might do, is if they ever wanted to put Kawhi Leonard at the four, that they would be able to do it, that they would go small, and that's kind of how they would counterattack if, you know, Zach Randolph, who's had success this year against San Antonio with him and Mark on the court at the same time, that they may just throw Kawhi at the four, and then they just really put Zach in a pickle, you know. But I think at this point the rotation, I mean, everybody except Wade Baldwin and Deontay Davis is probably open to playing. I doubt Jarrell Martin just because, I mean, he didn't even play. I mean, he'd been in Iowa so long, and he really didn't play that much at the end of this year either. So it's probably everybody except those three. I mean, it's a thin rotation anyway. I mean, it's what, Gasol, Brandon Wright, Conley, Andrew Harrison, Ennis, Vince Carter, Troy Daniels, Jamichael Green. I mean, did I say Zach?
You may have missed Wayne Selden.
I mean, Seldon will probably get in. He will, but he'll have a thin leash. He'll have a short leash. He will have a short leash just because he's a rookie. Unless they want to get a good enough look at him because they see he could be somebody going forward, possibly someone you have on one of those two-way contracts next year when the roster's expanded, you can have the guy on the D-League contract. And, you know, when he's in the D-League, he gets paid D-League money. When he's in the Grizzlies, he gets paid Grizzlies money. So that's certainly possible. I don't know. I don't feel comfortable about Seldon. I mean, I know he's athletic and he can get to the rack a little bit, but with the playoffs are a different animal. And you already are for sure having to roll out Andrew Harrison, who I think's actually looked better the last couple of weeks. I think he's looked more decisive. I've actually thought he's looked quicker getting to the basket and then kind of jumping in the air and making one of those passes. That's showing confidence to me. He looks like the game's slowing down for him a little bit more, but he still is limited with what he can do because of his lack of athleticism. So I just don't know if you ever want to throw out two rookies in a playoff game, you know, getting meaningful minutes. That just seems that's tough to me. I think one key is going to be if Fizdale's really, I mean, they've got to stagger Mike and Mark's minutes. They have to. You've got to have one of those guys on the court at all times, because we've seen even in these last two games against the Pistons and the Mavericks, when they have neither one of those guys on the court, I mean, it's a disaster. It is an absolute disaster.
Right. All right, you're listening to GBB Live. We're talking with John Roser of 92.9 FM. You can follow him at John_Roser. So we've talked about how important Mike and Mark are to this team. Outside of those two, who do you think needs to step up the most for the Grizzlies to, you know, have a shot in the series? Is it Zach off the bench, or is it one of the young guys, one of the wings needs to really step up in Tony's absence? Who do you think is the key here outside of Mark and Mike?
Okay, so before Tony went down, I thought Vince Carter. I was thinking Vince Carter. And because I, you know, like you said, Mike and Mark are going to give them what they're going to give them. You know what they're going to be. And I think they have another level they can hit in this series. And I think Zach's going to give them what Zach can give them. Like, you don't worry about Zach in the playoffs. Like, Zach's going to give you everything he has. And if San Antonio just makes it difficult on them, because that's what they've done, if they can somehow transform everything they've done the last couple times that the Grizzlies have played them in the playoffs, then so be it. But you know Zach's going to give you everything he has. Zach's going to get buckets because Zach's going to get shots. So you know that's going to happen. I thought before the Tony injury it was Vince Carter. I tend to say now Troy Daniels to me, because the only way you can offset what Tony did for you defensively and just his spirit and his energy, one thing we've seen – you know, we've always – and Brandon, I heard you talking about Tony before, like missing his energy. And I have Jason and John Goop with me all the time when I talk about Tony Allen's spirit. But that's real with this team. That's real. And it is. It's real with what he gives them and the energy boost he gives them. We've seen it over 7 years, what he does. But I've seen this year when Troy Daniels gets going – this team does get a little pep in their step. Like, they do. They do get fired up a little bit when Troy Daniels starts knocking down all these threes. And I think it is now – they are going to have to score a lot now. You are not going to be able to rely on, hopefully, that top five defense coming back. That top five NBA defense coming back for this series. I don't think you can rely on that now with the injury to Tony. So I think you're going to have games where you score a ton. And now San Antonio ended the season with the number one defense in the league according to defensive efficiency. So it's easier said than done. But I think Troy Daniels is going to have about three games in this series where he's going to have to hit five threes. And that is asking a lot. I know that's asking a lot. But I'm saying if you want to win the series, I think Troy Daniels means a ton. I think Vince can give you – because of the break between games typically, I think Vince could probably give you three games in this series where Vince is going to be really good. But what hurts Vince now is Vince is going to be way more responsible on the defensive end now too because of Tony's absence. So I think that can in turn take away from Vince's offensive game. So that's why I think it is huge for Troy Daniels to have some big offensive games in this series.
Who do you think starts in the place of Tony Allen now, John?
I'll say Daniels. Maybe they want to bring him off the bench, but I'll say Daniels. And the reason I say Daniels is because when you've got enough in your starting lineup with Mike, Mark, Jamichael, and Vince is not, you know, obviously the quickest guy in the world, but Vince is competent on defense. He's competent. Absolutely, he's competent. You know Jamichael Green can defend. You know what Mark can do defensively. You know Mike can defend, too, when he wants to. You know, obviously, when these guys have to pick up more of the slack offensively, their defense will drag a little bit. But I think I feel comfortable putting Troy in that two spot because that way, if they want to start Danny Green out on Conley, well, Tony Parker's got to guard Troy Daniels, and Troy Daniels will have no problem shooting over Tony Parker's head. And I don't think you'd want to put against San Antonio with how disciplined they are and how well they run their sets. I don't know how much you want Zach and Troy Daniels on the court together defensively. So that's why I'd probably throw Troy in there because I think you can get by defensively with Troy in there, with Troy starting when you have Mike, Mark, Jamichael, and Vince out there with him.
We'll get you out of here on this, Roser. We're up against it. Prediction time. Who wins and how many games and why?
I want to say Spurs in six now, but it's Spurs in five. I'll give the Grizzlies a game, Spurs in five. Before this, my prediction would have been Grizzlies in six or Spurs in seven, but I'm not going to tell you which one because it doesn't matter anymore.
Fair enough. Well, John Rosa, thank you so much.
But if the Grizzlies win in six, then I'm gonna claim that I picked the Grizzlies in six.
And you can say that you said it on GBB Live, and we'll give you credit for it.
Absolutely.
All right. Much, Rosa. We appreciate it. Of course, we'll have you on down the line.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, that was John Roser. Follow him on Twitter at John_Roser. That is of 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis fame, of course, as well as the Grizzlies pregame show. He's going to have a busy several weeks, hopefully, but definitely a busy couple weeks. I'll get your take on that, Brandon. Who do you think is going to start instead of instead of Tony Allen? I originally wanted James Ennis, but I'm going to be honest with you. I think Roser just kind of talked me into Troy Daniels being that guy.
I mean, he made a really good point, especially about Zebo and Daniels being on the court at the same time and the sort of issues that presents. The one question I really have about Daniels is just, like, he tends to be streaky. If he's got it one night, then he's got it. And you just, I mean, feed him the ball, let him shoot. But if he doesn't have it, then he can be off. And I wonder if he's going to have a shorter leash as well, if Fizdale's kind of, like, sees that maybe he doesn't have it, like, in the first half, and so you kind of limit his minutes at half and maybe try to get him going in the second half. So that's kind of – I kind of wonder how Fizdale's going to play that. But I think he's right about, you know, playing Daniels and Zebo together. So I think he makes a good point there. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the go-to. But I was with you originally, too, saying, you know, put Vince out there at the two and Ennis at the three with Jamichael, Mark, and Mike to start. But it'll be interesting to see what he does. So we should have a pretty good idea. Start Saturday. So Saturday afternoon, we should know what Fizdale's thinking.
I think hopefully Fizdale plays it as close to the best as he can, so Popovich doesn't have time to prepare for game one. Because that is the one silver lining to this, is now Popovich has no idea what you're going to do. And, you know, I use the example of me often on a much smaller scale as a high school football coach. You know, one of the biggest benefits to a coach is when the opposition cannot prepare for you, when they have no idea what you're going to do. He can go in a variety of directions now. And obviously you're going to miss Tony Allen. I think Roser is exactly right about that energy that TA brings. It's hard to explain, and it sounds cheesy to say it this way, but you just kind of have to feel it, whether you're in the arena or whether you're watching the game and you're kind of tuned in with the Grizzlies if you've been following them for a while. Roser's right. There is something to that. But at the same time, you can use this to your advantage. Now, if it is Troy Daniels and they don't know it's going to be Troy Daniels, how do you defend him? You make them prepare for a variety of things instead of saying, okay, it's going to be T.A. and Vince on the wing. We know what we can do to attack that. So there is, at least for game one. Game two, Popovich will probably have it all figured out and it'll be doom and gloom again. But I think that they can at least start fast and have a potential to build confidence early in game one, because Popovich is going to have no idea what the Grizzlies are trying to do, as long as he can kind of play it close to the vest, like we said.
Right.
This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. We are your hosts. I'm Joe Molinax. That voice you heard before mine was that of Brandon Connor. And before we get to our next guest on our playoff preview, I do want to give a shout out to our tremendous sponsors, Grizz Essentials. They gave out two boxes last week. Very excited about that. They'll be doing another giveaway on the show next week, as we will be halfway through our playoff series with the Spurs. We'll be back on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves on Wednesday night next week, because the Grizzlies play Thursday night in game three. So it'll be a Wednesday night show next week. We'll talk about the first two games, look ahead to the next, hopefully more than two, but at least two games. The Grizzlies have four more guaranteed here in the with the postseason. So that'll be Wednesday night next week. We'll do another Grizz Essentials giveaway. GrizzEssentials.net. Make sure you're making them your one-stop shop for all of your Grizzlies gear as you head into the playoffs and postseason. Brandon, Roser touched on something that upset me greatly. It cut to the core of me, if I'm being honest. And I'm going to talk to our next guest about it, because I know he's going to, if not make fun of me for it, he will at least appreciate my concern and my sadness. It really is, you know, something that I can only talk to one of my mentors and good friends about. When I'm this down and out, as John Roser kind of just did with a gut punch there, I'm excited to be able to talk to the Memphis Flyers Beyond the Arc blog. Excuse me, can't even get it out. I'm so distraught. His name's Kevin Light. Kevin, I don't know if you were listening earlier. John Roser said about Chandler Parsons that retirement may be on the table for him. And that just makes me so sad, Kevin Light. It really just drains me.
Well, I didn't, I wasn't listening in. I didn't hear that part. What was that based on?
It was based off of, he didn't go too in depth, and it was more of a maybe. It certainly wasn't breaking news on GBB Live, but he made it sound like the prognosis on my boy Parsons is not the best. We can start with that. I didn't want to talk about Chandler too much on this show, but do you think that if that, yeah, you're both laughing. Do you think that is really not even necessarily the retirement thing, because that was the first time Roser said it, and that's, we can leave that alone. Chandler Parsons, is it possible that he's, and maybe possible is not even the right word, is it likely that we will never see at this point the Chandler Parsons that we thought we were going to get?
Well, it depends on
that's kind of a loaded question.
I thought
we were going to get the Chandler Parsons who was going to be the third best player on the team. Let's start at that, because that's what he's paid to be.
Yeah, well, and I think that's – I would say that it's likely that if you are expecting the athletic playmaker Chandler Parsons, then it is likely that you're never going to see that Chandler Parsons. I think the Grizzlies kind of have sort of resigned themselves to that, you know? I mean, I think he's going to be – I think they just are expecting him to be an above average player. You know what I mean? Not necessarily what he has been in the past, because he's had so many knee injuries, you know? That's the first time I've heard anything about retirement, but you know, I can't say that it's not the first time it's crossed my mind. I mean, the one of the other players who's had this sort of knee trouble is Brandon Roy, you know? That's the name that's the name that nobody had really brought up until this most recent surgery,
until just
right?
now.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying that that's what I expect to happen, but it's certainly a possibility. I think you would be you'd be naive to pretend that it's not. You know,
a major
don't think
part
they know
of my
get until he gets through.
a major part of my fandom of Chandler Parsons is being naive. So thanks a lot, Kevin Light. Thank you for continuing to crush my spirit and my hopes and dreams. I really am going to have to frame that jersey now because apparently Chandler Parsons is becoming Brandon Roy and my world is shattering. We're talking with Kevin Light of the Memphis Flyer. Nothing matters anymore. I guess we got to try to get through this segment here. Kevin,
I was about to say, we haven't actually even talked about the actual like depressing
bad
news. Well,
because Roser gut punched me, and then you kicked me in the face with the Brandon Roy name. But that's okay. I survived Jeff Green. I'll survive this.
I have a question. Let's set the over under Chandler Parsons on return. Over under better or worse than Jeff Green?
Oh no.
better because he knows he has a feel for when to shoot and when not to shoot.
Okay. Well, let's move off of this because you're both just enjoying torturing me now. I wrote an article earlier this week, Kevin, about this being Mike Conley's team. And I caught a little bit of flack for it on Twitter and elsewhere for people perceived it as being kind of negative towards Marc Gasol. And it wasn't necessarily meant to be negative towards Mark as much as it was meant to be a compliment to Mike Conley and the kind of leadership that he has displayed this season. Everybody's different. And I think that David Fizdale perhaps is realizing he asked Marc Gasol to be something that Mark just genuinely isn't, not necessarily right, wrong. It's just kind of a different perspective on how Mark is in relation to the rest of the team. And Mike Conley kind of is that leader that Fizdale wants. And this is Mike Conley's team now. That was my general premise in that article. Going into the playoffs, of course, especially now that Tony Allen is out, you can't be anywhere near a hopeful, successful team without either one of them. But do you buy into my notion that this is Mike Conley's team now in terms of the leadership role, especially after the season he's had and the contract, of course, he signed?
And I think, you know, you said it's not an indictment of Mark, but I think on some level it is, right? I mean, not necessarily an indictment, just I think this year, if this year has proven anything, it's that Mike Conley is the leader on the team and not Mark, you know? And rightly or wrongly, Mark has been asked to do that all year long, and I think he's kind of chafed against it. You know, I think he's just not comfortable in that role. You know, I think in that way, it is very much Mike Conley's team because he is the natural leader. He's always been that in some form or fashion, not vocally, but certainly in terms of his personality and in terms of what he does on the court. You know, he's the one kind of steering everything. I think Fizdale, I think he meant well and was trying to do the right thing in making Gasol the sole captain in trying to push him into that leadership spot because, you know, when Gasol's playing well, Gasol's the best player on the team. But, you know, I think we've just seen a lot of examples of that. It's just not who Mark is. You know, it's not the way he plays. It's not the way he carries himself. And I think, in a lot of ways it is the way that Conley plays. We've seen both of these guys do amazing things with the other one out this year. But to me, you know, I think you can get farther with Mike Conley holding your locker room together than you can with Marc Gasol holding it together. I'll put it that way.
I was on Midday Sports 56 earlier today, Kevin, and they talked about Mark and how this series, if it goes Spurs in four, and you and I have talked about this briefly in the past, if it is that true, just dominant performance, even with Gasol and Conley healthy, ready to roll, and the Spurs just come out and wipe the floor with Memphis, it's maybe there's one competitive game in the four games. That is on the table, especially with Allen out. You know, Tony Allen and Zach Randolph leaving in free agency, of course, that's possible. But how do you think it is more likely than ever, if that occurs, it's also possible Memphis makes this a competitive series? And you can have a competitive sweep. We've seen that before, back to the Western Conference Finals. That was as competitive as a sweep can probably be. But if it is just a blowout and the Grizzlies are completely outclassed, Do you think it is now more likely that Marc Gasol could be perhaps be that nuclear option in a trade than Mike Conley? Do you think the team would be more interested in moving Mark than Mike at this point?
Well, I mean, that's kind of that's a Sophie's choice.
No doubt.
I think in terms of what you can get back right now, I think you're probably going to get more for Gasol. You know, I think I'm a big fan of the Hrdlicka nuclear option, which is, if you're going to trade him to Boston, get the Boston pick, get the Memphis pick back, and get Jaylen Brown. Something like that, I think, would be hard to argue against even for the fans, you know, because you see what they're getting back. You understand that he's an aging big man and that you kind of got to cash out while you can cash out. You know, I think I don't think David Fizdale was hired to extend grit and grind forever, right? That's not what he's interested in doing. I don't think that's what the team is interested in doing. They hired him to build a championship culture for the Memphis Grizzlies franchise. And, you know, I think that if he or especially if the front office senses that they're going to have a better chance to be more successful in the long term if they make that sort of a move, I don't know that they'll have the guts to do it, but I know they'll at least talk about it. I mean, I certainly think this is the first summer ever probably that do we trade Marc Gasol is at least going to be seriously discussed, because whether they do it or not, they should at least talk it through and consider it. And I think this is going to be the first summer that's part of their strategy, part of their war planning for the draft and for free agency.
Just as a quick follow-up, if they do decide to go that route, how much confidence do you have in this front office to really, to be able to rebuild this team?
In Chris Wallace? Very little.
Honesty.
The team has been very successful for a very long time, but I think everybody acknowledges that, they've made good moves lately, especially since the Palace coup that brought Wallace back in to be in charge. They've made good moves, right? I mean, you can argue about drafting Jordan Adams over Rodney Hood. You can argue about the Chandler Parsons signing, but at any rate, they were, they're moves that make sense. They're understandable, justifiable, smart basketball moves, I think. So it's not that I necessarily don't think they can make good decisions. It's that the track record is not really great over Chris Wallace's whole career, right? He's a guy who takes gambles on guys nobody else wants. That's how the Grizzlies ended up with Zach Randolph. That's how the Grizzlies ended up with Marc Gasol. That's how the Grizzlies ended up with Tony Allen. He got pretty lucky and hit on three really big bets. Now you could say that means that they weren't bets, that he knew what he was doing, but I'm not sure I'm ready to go down that road. I'm just not sure that he's going to be able to do that again. I'm not sure that's something that can be replicated. So if they are going to go that route, I think that's really interesting, and I have a lot of questions if that's where they're going.
Well, that's certainly fair. Well, we talked to Roser a little earlier about whether the season had been, was it a success or a failure? But speaking specifically about this postseason, I mean, now you have your without Tony Allen going into the Spurs series. What do you think the Grizzlies have to do to make this postseason successful? Is it just playing the Spurs closely? Do they need to win at least a certain number of games for you to consider that? Or is it just, do you have like a number you want them to hit in terms of not get blown out, or is there any sort of what would the Grizzlies need to do for you to call this a successful postseason?
At this point without Tony Allen, I think they need to play them closely. I mean, in terms of on the actual court, in terms of things they needed to do, I mean, the Tony Allen Kawhi matchup was going to be extremely important in terms of Tony being able to defend him, deny him the ball. They really needed Tony's defense in this series. But the other thing that I think was going to be key and is still going to be key is on the other end of the floor. If Mike gives Tony Parker so many problems that Kawhi Leonard ends up guarding Mike Conley, then you have to figure out, it's time to kind of throw Andrew Harrison or whoever in the fire and then say, you know, can you actually get Mike Conley off the ball enough that he can run Kawhi off screens, that kind of thing. Because if you get in a situation where Mike is the only guy ever handling the ball and Kawhi Leonard is guarding him, you're gonna lose in four games. I think there are a lot of good matchups for the Grizzlies. I think that the Spurs of all the top four seeds are probably the one that I'm most okay with them playing against. But I do think not having Tony really kind of shifts the balance of power in a way that I kind of didn't even take into account until I realized, until I saw that he wasn't going to be in the series. I think without Tony, if they can make it a 6 or 7 game series, I think you can call that a success, but at the same time, that's another year in the playoffs with an excuse for why they got eliminated,
We get to spend another 2 years talking about if Tony Allen was healthy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's four postseasons in a row of if player X was healthy. 2014, it was if Mark Gasol was fully back from his knee injury. 2015, it's if Mike and Tony were healthy. Last year, it's if literally anyone was
healthy.
Everybody. I think at some point you look around and you realize 2013 was the last year all these guys were healthy, and that was 4 years ago. I think the fact that he's hurt kind of already makes this postseason not a success in that way. You were hoping to go into the playoffs at full strength. For whatever reason, you didn't rest Tony in the last game and he got hurt, and now here we are. So, I think – in the one sense, if they play them tough at all, yes, that's impressive that they're able to do that. I still think they should probably make it a 5 or 6 game series. I don't know that they'll get swept, but I think just the fact that you're here yet again and you don't have all your guys is that's not a success.
John Roser on the previous segment, Kevin, we asked him who he thinks should replace Tony Allen in the starting lineup. And he said Troy Daniels. Now, earlier in the day, I thought James Ennis would have been a solid choice. You bump Vince to the 2, and then you've got Ennis at the 3. But he made a convincing argument for Troy Daniels in trying to make sure that if you're going to try to score, because that kind of has to be your mentality, trying to get as many points on the board, and obviously Troy can hit threes in bunches when he's hot, you also want to try to negate the defensive impact of that as much as possible now that Tony is gone, by trying to ensure that Troy Daniels and Zach Randolph play as little together as possible. So having Zach come off the bench and maybe every time Zach comes in, Troy comes out, something along those lines. He won me over with that argument. And I think I'm kind of leaning towards Troy Daniels. Who do you think should take that spot? To me, it definitely has to be Ennis or Daniels, or maybe you have a different perspective on it entirely.
No, I think Ennis or Daniels are definitely the two that come to my mind. I think the natural inclination is Ennis because I think he proved early in the year, especially that, when he plays as a starter and he can get into that rhythm, he knows he's going to have 20 something minutes. He plays well, right? It's when his spot in the rotation is not certain and he's getting weird rotations and not really in a rhythm that his quality of play starts to drop off. So I think you can get a lot out of Ennis. I definitely see the benefit of moving Daniels there. I just think, defensively, he's just so bad that you're really kind of playing with fire. You're daring the Spurs to try to outscore you with a 2 guard, right, if you start Daniels. So they probably will figure out a way to do that. I'm just not sure that the defensive liability – with Brandon Wright in the mix, you can play Zach Less anyway. If you think you're going to lose the series anyway, and you can play Deontay Davis like 7 minutes, you can play Zach very little. I don't know if Zach's going to be okay with that, but that may just be the brave new world that we live in. So, you know, I think there are ways to kind of hide Zach Randolph's defensive problems against the Spurs that don't even necessarily mean that you have to move Daniels to the starting lineup.
Fill in the blank. Go ahead, Brandon.
I wanted to ask you about, right, Matt Hardlicka had talked about this, and I think Harrington touched on it as well, and Zach Lowe mentioned it. What do you think Wright's role in the series, like, where do you think he fits into the rotation? Because him and Z-Bo don't necessarily work well together. So is he going to eat into Z-Bo's minutes, or do you try to play him with Gasol at some point? Because they've only played 89 minutes together this season, like this whole season. So where do you think Wright kind of fits into this, like the big man rotation?
Yeah, he's a weird fit. I think against the Spurs, though, you got to figure out how to use him somewhere, especially once Dedmon and Aldridge are sitting, especially if Dedmon is sitting, you know, because you can kind of put Powell in a blender. You know, I think just straight up taking some of Z-Bo's minutes is probably one answer. I like him with Gasol. I kind of am surprised if that hasn't happened more than it has. You know, I think with Wright kind of diving to the rim and Gasol popping out to the elbow or whatever, you can kind of stretch the defense in ways that, you know, you're not really getting out of the paint, but you're still spacing the floor a little bit better. You know, I like the Wright Gasol combo. You know, Jamichael Green's been really good. Maybe you just stagger Gasol a little bit, so Gasol is trying to play more minutes against some kind of theoretical Aldrich and Pau Gasol lineup instead of being out there when Deadman's out there. You know, you have some options. I think you can get him at least 15 minutes and just find some space to let him get to the rim and score.
All right, Kevin, fill in the blank here for us. The Grizzlies will win the series if blank.
If an improbable 2011 like win in San Antonio happens.
So you're saying they have, obviously they're going to have to win at least one in San Antonio to win the series. You're thinking, how possible is that? Is that, you know, borderline miracle stuff, or do you think they have what it takes to pull off? You know, game one feels like the game, since there's some uncertainty as to how that starting lineup will look, and especially how they play without Tony Allen. Game one feels like the game they have to pick off if they've got a shot.
Yeah, I think so too. If they don't win, one of the first two, I'm not confident that they can hold home court. You know, I think if they don't win one of those first two, it's possible they get swept or go out in five. I think that's going to be such a mental kind of thing for them to start it off strong, kind of hit San Antonio in the mouth. You know, I don't think San Antonio really knows what they're going to do either. And it's going to be – they're going to game plan a bunch of different options, and the Grizzlies are – if I had to guess, I would say the Grizzlies are probably going to pick their starting lineup somewhere about – 2 hours before the game starts. You know, I think they've got a lot of work to do. I think if they win game one or win game two, I think that really sets them up to come back and play well in Memphis, you know, and at that point you see what happens.
It gives you an opportunity to really play off of the energy of the crowd, who's probably going to be fired up. You know, the narrative, we've been talking a lot about narrative the past month or so, the narrative that is this possibly being the end of this group of players. I think you're going to see a pretty rowdy game three, especially if they pick off one of those games in San Antonio. That'll make all the difference here early in the series.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies will
lose the series.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think if they get blown out in both of these first two games, I would be surprised if the Grizzlies even sell out game three and four. You know, everybody's going to be so down on them. But if they can get one of these other, if they can get one of the first two, it's going to be such a different building. It's going to be the grindhouse for game three and four. If they can get one of those first two, you know, I think they kind of have to prove to everybody, including themselves, that they are still competitive.
I agree with that. The Grizzlies will lose the series if blank.
if Yeah, if they don't figure out what to do with Kawhi Leonard with Tony out.
Yeah, that's a pretty simple one. I would agree. And it really is going to be fascinating to see if they try to scheme it, if they double team, if they just hope, you know, maybe they go James Ennis instead of Troy Daniels, and they just hope that Ennis and a combination of him and Seldon and Harrison, however they piece it together, can try to replace Tony Allen in the aggregate. It will be interesting to see in game one how they handle that. Kevin, we'll get you out of here on this. It's prediction time. Who wins in how many games and why?
Well, you know, on my own podcast earlier this week, I said I thought it could probably be Spurs in seven or Grizzlies in six. But, you know, now I think it's probably going to be Spurs in six. I think the Grizzlies will win a game or two. Especially, I think they can win a home game for sure. But I just don't like what not having Tony Allen does to all the other matchups.
Yep.
If Tony Allen finds a way to make his way back by game three, because the spacing of these games is such that they play game one on Saturday, then they play game two on Monday, they don't play again until Thursday. You know, I know it says there's a month recovery and all that stuff, but if they somehow found a way to get Tony Allen back on the court by those games in Memphis, and the Grizzlies already found a way to pick off one in San Antonio, do you think that gives them a jolt, or do you just think there's no way that Tony Allen can come back and be ready to play from an injury like this?
Well, I mean, I think it was Woj that was tweeting that it's usually a month.
Right.
But, you know, I wouldn't expect it. Tony tried to play in game five against the Warriors, and he couldn't run.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
So I don't think it's worth that.
I don't think so either. I was just curious as to your opinion. I was going to mention the Warriors series as well. So we're on the same page. And I tend to agree with you. I'm surprised you and Rosa are both very smart and very learned in the ways of the Grizzlies. You guys are giving a lot of weight to Tony Allen, and maybe I'm undervaluing him a bit. I have a tendency to do that from time to time and overvaluing Grizzlies wing. Right.
Yeah, I think it's matchup specific. I think if you're talking about talking about the Warriors and talking about the Rockets, I mean, his defense is going to be a factor, but he's also, I think against those teams, his poor help defense is a bigger deal. But I feel like with the Spurs this year, in the kind of the way they're playing, the Spurs, look, these are not the 2014 Spurs, right? This is a very slow,
right.
Very kind of weird Spurs team. So, I think this specific matchup where you've got Kawhi is in a situation where Durant is where Kawhi is kind of like the Durant of 2014-15, where you can just deny the ball, right? That's what Tony's the best at, ball denial of ball handling scores. So it kind of plays specifically to his strength. So not having him is a huge deal.
It's a big deal.
I mean, like I said earlier, I think it's just a domino effect, like not being able to slow down Kawhi on the offensive end, you've got defensive issues, and then that's going to spill over into the offensive end. It just really sets up poorly for the Grizzlies, just losing that element in this series.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
Kevin, thank you so much for your time, sir, as always. Not just a friend of the show, but a friend of the blog, of course. Thank you for coming on, and make sure, folks, that you're checking out the podcast that Kevin referenced earlier. Obviously, check out the Beyond the Arc blog of the Memphis Flyer. Kevin will be putting out great content throughout the playoffs and then beyond as the regular season at some point, or obviously the regular season has ended, as the postseason at some point will end for the Grizzlies. We can all hope and dream it'll be with a parade on Beale Street, but more than likely coming to an end here in the next month or so, maybe a little less. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, retirement is not on the table for me.
Oh, God. Dang it, Kevin. Not cool, Kevin Life. All right, get out of here, Kevin Life. Get out of here. Goodness gracious. He does that on purpose, Brandon, and you know he does it on purpose because he'll chime in, whether it's on Twitter or somewhere else, with a Jeff Green comment, and he says it's out of love. That's what he says. But I'm telling you right now, he does that to just grind my gears. He knows exactly what he's doing, but I love Kevin Life. He's terrific. And he's still on the line. He can hear all these things I'm saying about him. Kevin, you're being mean to me, but I know it's out of love.
You got to do something for fun.
Now, the rest of this certainly isn't fun in terms of the injuries and all of that, but we have to find ways to amuse ourselves. Thank you, Kevin.
See you guys.
All right. Later. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Kevin Leip of the Memphis Flyer. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already, at Flyer Grizz. That's with one Z, Flyer Grizz blog. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am one of your hosts, Joe Mullinax. I'm joined by my co-host, Brandon Connor. Brandon, before we get to our official predictions, what are your overall takes on the big meanie head that is Kevin Leip? You know, he really is kind of looking at this Grizzlies team. And to the credit of Kevin, he's been one of the guys from the beginning who has said, you know, this has been a team in transition. He said that almost 2 years ago now, and he's been exactly right. This 2 year span of Grizzlies basketball, regular season wise, they've been what, 85 and 79 or something along those lines. Quick math on my part. But they're essentially a 500 basketball team with this group of guys, and that's a pretty darn large sample size. So Kevin's been saying they're in transition for a while. You know, put Chandler Parsons to the side for the moment, at least, because he is a part of their long-term plans, obviously, for better or worse. In this playoff series, why, you know, Kevin said he felt good about the Spurs. Roser said he felt good about the Spurs. Lots of smart people. It's not like we're making this up. There's a lot of smart folks who follow the Grizzlies who think this is a good matchup for them. I just struggle with that idea because of how well the Spurs have played against Memphis recently. Kevin makes a good point, though, Brandon. This isn't your uncle's Spurs team of a few years ago. They really are pretty Kawhi dependent.
Right, and LaMarcus Aldridge is having a down year, and you've seen that like Ginobili's on the tail end of his career. Tony Parker's just been, I don't think he couldn't seem to get on the floor in the Olympics, and he's washed now. So Kawhi is basically having to carry the team now, and he does a great job of that. And Pop does a really good job of scheming. Powell isn't necessarily the greatest perimeter defender, and the Spurs are probably better with Deadman at center, but Pop just does a good job of scheming his team to wins, and his coaching ability, especially in the regular season, rivaled. But it's just that what is around Kawhi just isn't at the level of the Spurs teams that were winning championships back in 2013, 2014. Like Kevin said. So I think that's kind of what it was. And a lot of it was, we talked about this last week too, the Rockets, the issue with that was the fact that they're just so much happens on the outside, and Zach's kind of a liability there. And even Tony's defense, his help defense isn't great. And so he can be a liability there. So just that matchup just doesn't play to the Grizzlies' strengths as much as San Antonio does. In San Antonio, what gives them problems is lack of athleticism, the fact that they don't match up well with athleticism is what I mean to say. And so the Grizzlies can't necessarily exploit that like teams like the Thunder can. And that's what ended up happening to them last year. But it's also sort of a strength on strength there. And so Memphis doesn't necessarily match up great against athleticism and ball movement like the Rockets have, but they're not compromised. So the Spurs don't compromise them as well or as badly on the defensive end with what they do. So I think that's really what it is. It's really just the matchup and the way how the Spurs team is built around basically Kawhi. And so if you can kind of figure out ways to shut down Kawhi, which is what Tony Allen could have been, then you've got a better likelihood of success against this team.
The Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day this week, thanks to the over 165 folks who voted in our poll for the show. What will be the outcome of the Grizzlies-Spurs playoff series? We asked John Roser, we asked Kevin Leip. Both of them were fairly positive with their Grizzlies outlooks until the Tony Allen injury. They both seem to say Spurs in five or six at this point. 6% of people, Brandon, believe it or not, thought that the Grizzlies could potentially sweep the Spurs or even win in five games. Lots of optimistic folks. 6% is still really optimistic, but that was the last place vote. 21% of people said Spurs win in six or seven games. 35% of voters said Spurs win in four or five games. And then the leader in the clubhouse, certainly not the majority, but at 38%, and again, thanks to everybody who voted, 38% of people predicted that the Grizzlies would win in six or seven games. Now, of course, they're Grizzlies fans. It's really hard to say that your team is going to lose a playoff series. And even now, Brandon, as we are here, you know, I've given my playoff predictions in roundtable form. I did it on the show with on middays today. You know, as you think about it, I waver. I go between head and heart because my head says, there's no way that the Grizzlies can pull this off logically. It just doesn't make sense. But your heart as a fan, and that's what we as even, you know, the media types like the Jeff Calkins and Kevin Leip now counts in that boat. You know, Kevin started as a blogger. He started as a fan, and Kevin would still tell you he's a fan of the team. You know, when you're a fan blogger like us, you don't want to post a bunch of stuff about how the Grizzlies are going to get waxed. Like our writer, Brandon Abraham, who did a great job logically arguing that Memphis could find a way to pull this off. Now, of course, that article and the poll started when Tony Allen was still believed to be a part of that process. That's not realistic anymore. And again, we talk about two smart guys and Roser and Leip. They just came on our show and said that makes a massive difference in terms of defending Kawhi and the chances that Memphis did indeed have. So having said all that, Brandon, it's time to go on the record. What is the outcome of this series going to be? Who's going to win and how many games and why?
So I responded in the round table, the same round table that you were in. And I said Spurs in six. And I felt like I was being fairly optimistic there. Like I could see the Grizzlies taking it to six, taking it to seven, even like winning the series. Like I thought it was a possibility. I didn't think it was the most realistic option, but I could see them winning. But I said Spurs in six. Without Allen, I'm more inclined to lean a little more toward Spurs in five. I still think it's possible that you get to a sixth game at home. I just think the issues, the lack of Tony Allen's defense is just going to cause too many issues, both defensively and then that domino effect I talked about on the offensive end. So I'm taking Spurs in five and I don't like it. I'd love to be proven wrong, but I just don't see how they're going to get around Kawhi Leonard, who's like certainly a viable MVP candidate. So Spurs in five for me.
I averaged it all out, and this will also be in the roundtable that posts on Friday that you were alluding to, Brandon. The blog as a whole picked Spurs in six, and that was before the Tony Allen stuff again. I asked for those responses. All of our writers chimed in the email thread. I'm going Spurs in five as well, and I think that that is contingent on two things now that Tony Allen is out. A, that's contingent on David Fizdale. Because if David Fizdale can take advantage of the fact, and that sounds crazy to say, but if he can take advantage of the fact, as we talked about earlier, that Greg Popovich has no idea what he's going to do without Tony Allen, and it leads to unpredictability. As I talked with Kevin a little bit about, I think that gives them a shot in game one. If he plays it close to the vest, if you don't find out who the starter is going to be until 90 minutes before the game, whenever it's due, that they have to have that posted. If they can find a way to take advantage of this as best they can and to sneak one of those two games in San Antonio, more than likely, at least in my opinion, game one, then you've got a shot at a series. But those two games are that important because I agree with Kevin. If they go into San Antonio and they don't win either of those games, I think that you're going to see a team that is defeated. I think you're going to see a group of guys who comes into Memphis and maybe aside from pride, like Zach Randolph's a great example. He's going to give his all every single rep, every single minute. But with Tony Allen out, if they lose both games in San Antonio, I don't disagree with him. I wouldn't be surprised if the games weren't completely sold out. You know, the Andersons might be able to get tickets to this game as well as, you know, others that aren't on NBATickets.com. And that's disappointing to say. Yeah, exactly. It's disappointing to say, but that is very much on the table because of the exhaustion that comes from two seasons of this kind of basketball. And you sound selfish and kind of entitled to say that, just to say that out loud, because you think about a team like the Sacramento Kings, who probably would kill to be in the shoes of the Memphis Grizzlies, making the playoffs for seven straight years. Or you think about a team like the Philadelphia 76ers, who gets glimpses of Joel Embiid and flashes of the process working, and then, oh, by the way, they're still a bottom five team in the NBA again this season. So it's you feel bad on one hand, but on the other hand, you know the team has reached its ceiling. You know that they are about to go against a team that is going to be perpetually in that top tier that you just can't get above and beyond. And I think that self-fulfilling prophecy really sets in if they don't pick off one of the games in San Antonio. And I don't see them doing that. Now, I do think they'll find a way to win one at home. I agree with Kevin. Even if it's not a sellout, the fans that will be there, I think there will be some passion. I think that you'll see kind of a last stand kind of game from a Zach Randolph, and that'll lead the energy way. And I could see them picking off one at home. But it comes down to that game one for me. And I just don't see them having the horses because, and I touched on this in my article earlier in the week, Chandler Parsons was supposed to be the third best player on this team. You can say what you want about his social media. You can say what you want about him. Your own personal hot take does not matter. The numbers do not lie here. He is paid to be the third best player on this basketball team, and he has not been there the entire season. So this team is not healthy, and they have never been healthy because their third best player is not there. We talked about that last week on this show as well. So you take that into account. Now you're without your fifth best player, arguably, in Tony Allen, and you expect to beat a 60-win team in the San Antonio Spurs. I have a hard time with that. So my heart says Grizzlies in six because I want to believe so very badly, but my head and where I'm going with all of my predictions, as you alluded to earlier, Brandon, in the roundtable and all that stuff, my prediction is going to be Spurs in five. Our next episode, we talked about it our next episode is going to be Wednesday. That'll be April 19th. We're excited to be back on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves on the 19th. Two playoff games will have been played, and that'll be leading in to game three Thursday night in Memphis. So we're excited to be back on Blog Talk Radio for our next episode on Wednesday, April 19th. We are obviously excited to be sponsored by GrizzEssentials.net. Continue to check them out. Subscribe. We'll be giving away another Grizz Essentials subscription next week. So make sure you're listening and tuning in to find how you can get that great Grizz gear from GrizzEssentials.net. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on iTunes so you never miss an episode of our show, GBB Live, or Chase Lucas's great You Like Hoops. We're excited about next week. Like we talked about, hopefully we're talking about a 1-1 series. I'm leaning towards thinking it's going to be an 0-2 series. Do you agree with that, Brandon?
I would probably say yes. But, maybe they shock the world and win, game one or game two or both.
It's called Believe Memphis, not Think Logically Memphis. Maybe we need to get behind this hashtag again. No more thinking logically. Let's believe, okay? So hopefully it's 1-1. That's my hope. But again, logically, that's going to be very difficult for them to do, especially in the absence of Tony Allen. But it can be played right. David Fizdale, Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, all those things. Those three guys are the key to whether it's schemes, whether it's obviously the play of your two best players. If they're going to pick off one of these two in San Antonio, it's going to be on them. Until next time, we'll record again next Wednesday, the 19th, as we said. For Brandon Connor, I am Joe Mullinax. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. Thanks again for listening wherever you are, however you're taking in the show. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.